Pastor Will Wheaton on his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, making the case for a Lutheran approach to the Church Fathers.
The thing that really is wonderful is to be able to read them as the witnesses that they are to the saving gospel of Christ, to deburden them from infallibility. Nobody believes they're infallible. Everybody agrees that there are things in them that they don't agree with. But the reading of the Fathers itself can be a huge help and light. If people have walked the terrain you walked before and made a map, it might be worthwhile to consult it before you head out in the same terrain. And in that way, their work through the Scriptures has been most beneficial to the Church across time.
You can meet and hear Will Wheaton June 19th and 20th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, just look for the Making the Case logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call 618-223-8385.
I read an article that said that winning an Oscar could lead to living 5 years longer. If that's true, I'd really like to thank the Academy because my husband is younger than me.
I don't think I'm capable of articulating quite how I feel right now, but please know this. I am fully aware that I am a lucky, lucky man. This Oscar...
Wow!
This has been a tremendous experience. This guy is as bold as bold can be. Look, it's great to be here. Who am I kidding? This is just great fun. Thank you very much.
That's Julianne Moore winning Best Actress for Still Alice, Eddie Redmayne for The Theory of Everything, Best Actor, and Michael Keaton accepting for Best Picture that he starred in, Birdman, from the Oscars the other night. We're going to be talking a little bit about the Oscars and about that film, Birdman, doing a little review of that film here in the first half hour of Issues Etc. Live this Tuesday afternoon, February the 24th. Greetings and welcome to the program. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. Thanks for tuning us in. After a conversation and a little movie review, Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be our guest. We'll continue our series with him responding to evangelical proof texts, going to a classic this time. Matthew 24, verse 36 through 42 is Jesus. Is it a parable? Is it a prediction? What is it? It's very odd. Two people in a bed, one is taken, one is left. Two people walking in a field, one is taken, one is left, grinding at a mill. It's part of Jesus' end times discourse. And it has been used and turned into a series of books by Tim LaHaye, Left Behind, and it's been used by dispensationalists and by pop American evangelicalism as one of the primary texts that support, they say, the secret rapture of the church before Christ's return. Is that true? We'll respond to that proof text with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller in the next half hour of Issues Etc. Robert Spencer will join us. We'll get an update on two issues. One, the death penalty that was given to a Saudi man who renounced his Muslim beliefs, and then also the abduction of still more Christians in Syria by the Islamic State. In the end of the program, Pastor Tom Baker joins us. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson with him, Jesus Calming the Storm in Mark chapter 4. You can join us with questions or with comments for the next 2 hours of Issues Etc. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org. You can send us a tweet as well, at issuesetc. Our beloved on-demand listeners, we know you're listening later. We know you're not listening live, but you can still join the conversation through the Issues Etc. comment line, 24-7, open for you, 618-223-8382, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about the Oscars and to review the movie that took Best Picture, Pastor Ted Giese. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts, associate pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd.
Why are the Oscars, the Academy Awards, this particular award? Why is this so important to Hollywood?
Well, every different field has its, achievement awards, and the Oscars for Hollywood is really no different. It's really the kind of like the crowning one, though. Like we talked about the Golden Globes a little while ago, and that's the Foreign Press Association. They're giving out those awards. But now this is their own peers voting on it. So that's an important thing, because the people who win the awards want the recognition of their peers. Also, it for Hollywood is a big deal because it can get people to watch movies that may not have watched that movie. Like, they may not watch that movie at all. There are people now who will watch Birdman who wouldn't have watched it before. And that translates into box office for them and is a financial gain. Also for actors and people like that and people working in the industry, Oscars then can open new doors for them, extend their careers. You know, everybody's kind of chasing after that statue in a lot of ways.
So were there any surprises for you? You watch a lot of movies for us. Were there any surprises for you at this year's Oscars?
I really I thought that Boyhood would get more Oscars, actually. That was, to me, that was the big surprise, and partly because of the effort and time it took to put the movie together and just all the moving parts and how well it came off. I thought that that would be recognized more so. Plus, Hollywood does like to do this thing where at the Oscars, the Academy sometimes will award somebody not just for what they did that year, but for a body of work. And that's what happened in the Best Actress category when Julianne Moore won. Really, it was more so for a body of work because very few people had seen that movie. Maybe more people will see it now. I haven't seen it yet myself. But Richard Linklater, the director of Boyhood, has been producing movies consistently for years and doing a really fine job. So I thought that had was another thing in his favor for winning the award. So I was surprised that Boyhood didn't win more awards. Patricia Arquette won for Best Supporting Actress for it, and that was really good. The other surprise for me, too, is how well The Grand Budapest Hotel did by Wes Anderson, because the movie was so long ago, and yet, you know, it must have had a real indelible mark on people's minds when voting time came, because it really pulled in a number of Oscars, mostly in the production, costume design, that kind of end of things.
Were you surprised that Birdman won Best Picture?
I was really thinking that it was either going to be Birdman or it was going to be Boyhood, and I kind of had thought that Boyhood would be the one that would win. I guess the thing that Birdman had going for it was that it's about an actor, and a lot of the people voting on it are actors. And it's kind of about the industry in some ways, and they're all in the industry. So it's really a movie about their world that they live in a lot of ways. So that, I think, maybe had an edge in the voting, probably. But yeah, it was either going to be one of those two movies, I thought. And I thought maybe Whiplash would be the dark horse, could maybe squeak in there. And it did win quite a few awards as well. But I was maybe a little surprised that... not completely surprised, but I'd kind of hoped that Boyhood would win. But Birdman did was a very interesting film.
Well, let's talk a little bit about it. It has some, I mean, whether you approach it technically or in terms of the story or even in terms of the acting, because there are no small number of unbelievable actors in Birdman. Michael Keaton, obviously the one who has the starring role. It's an unusual film in more than one respect, isn't it?
It's operating on a bunch of different levels. I think that, like, technically it's a very well-made movie. So if people are unaware of how it's made, maybe they've heard about this, but what they've done is the cinematographer who had won the previous year for cinematography, who had won for the movie Gravity, and which had these long extended shots in it, it now has brought that down to earth, and it's part of this. So he's helped the director put together a movie where you just have these extraordinarily long shots. And often when you're watching a movie, it's cutting back and forth between the actors. And because it's this really long extended shot, there's no breaks. Like, they're acting for an like a long stretch, you see an entire scene start, go through the middle, and then the camera just kind of floats away, goes down the hallway, goes down some steps, and then meets up with some other actors, and now we're having another scene. And they'll string numbers of these together, and it's fairly seamless. There's very few cuts. This is a really kind of a compelling visual technique that they're doing. It requires a lot more skill in kind of like mapping out what's going to happen, and the actors have to be able to retain bigger chunks of what they're working on in order to pull it off. So the technical end of it is quite interesting. It provides this sort of God-eye view of everything that's happening, because you're kind of a witness to it all, like you're watching it all unfold in a way that's not interrupted by those cuts. Also, because the main subject matter is the production of a play on Broadway, now you're getting into the area of live theater. And when you're actually at a play in a live theater situation, you're watching the play and there is no cuts. You're just seeing everything unfold. And the way that they've used this technical aspect of the film kind of engenders or makes you think of that kind of style of watching something, that you, it's almost more like it's really happening in a kind of like theater kind of situation, except now you're getting to go behind the scenes on the stage with the actors and with all of the other people involved in the production.
What is the story that is presented in Birdman?
In a nutshell, the story is this fading Hollywood actor, and this is the character played by Michael Keaton, and his name is Regan Thomas, and he's Thompson, rather, and he's a fading actor. He was very popular. At one point, he was a superhero character named Birdman in a number of movies, and but now he's kind of washed up. He wants to reinvent his career or reignite his career, get it going again. So he's taken the work of an actual writer, Raymond Carver, who anyone can go and read his short stories. He's taken that within the context of this movie, and he's made a play out of one of the stories, and it's being released on Broadway. And it's about that, you know, it's kind of like in the days leading up to the opening night, there's that, and then there's his kind of complex relationships. He's got a relationship with his girlfriend, his ex-wife, his daughter, this new actor that dropped in the middle of everything. But on top of all of that, like, that's enough of a stuff, enough to make a whole movie. On top of that, he's also struggling with psychotic depression, which includes things like auditory and visual hallucinations. And one of the hallucinations is his persona of Birdman from the past, who literally talks into his ear. Sometimes you see him, sometimes it's just the voice. But it's kind of a cajoling, antagonistic voice that's there. So this is all happening in the course of the film, and he's kind of trying to navigate his way through all of this.
We're talking about the Oscars and reviewing the movie Birdman that won Best Picture at the Oscars. Pastor Ted Giese is our guest. It's Tuesday afternoon, February the 24th. Our review of Birdman continues on the other side of the break. Then we will continue our series, responding to evangelical proof texts, with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller, turning to one of the proof texts often used by evangelicals for the secret rapture.
I have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
Throughout the history of the United States, we as a country have enjoyed our catchphrases from give me liberty or give me death to today's classic, it is what it is. TV commercials have added such classics as where's the beef to eat fresh. Here at St. Mark Lutheran Church in Edmond, Oklahoma, we do not resort to catchphrases. Here we are about growing God's family by preaching God's word, by administering the sacraments, and building up God's people. So the next time you find yourself in central Oklahoma on a Sunday morning, come join the friendly folks at St. Mark in Edmond. You'll be glad you did. This is most certainly true.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd. Welcome to a little movie review of the Oscars Best Picture, Birdman. Pastor Ted Giese is our guest. Ted, you note that at the Oscars in general, mental illness was kind of a theme that ran through many of the films that were at least being considered, if not winning. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, you know, at one point, one of the actresses who was winning an award, and I can't remember exactly who it was, but basically they said, we need to talk about mental illness. And it struck me, and then I thought back about, like, just all the various movies that were nominated and the ones that were winning, and I'm like, a lot of these movies are dealing with mental illness-related things. Or some kind of physical illness, too, like Theory of Everything, Stephen Hawking, he's got a motor neuron disease, so ALS. And then Still Alice and is dealing with Alzheimer's. And then there's this documentary, Glenn Campbell, I'll Be Me, which is about him and his going through Alzheimer's now. And it was up for Best Song, so he had a song that dealt with that. Birdman, like we said, psychotic depression. Asperger's Syndrome in The Imitation Game. Post-traumatic stress disorder in American Sniper and Unbroken. Paranoid schizophrenia in Foxcatcher, and antisocial personality disorders in Gone Girl. Like, this is like a big year full of kind of dealing with this stuff. And Hollywood has a kind of a history of dealing with movies that touch on mental illness or are focused on it. People may remember One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest from 1977. It won 5 Oscars. A Beautiful Mind from 2001. It won 4 Oscars. So there's a lot of these. And recently, too, there was Silver Linings Playbook. Jennifer Lawrence won for that in 2013 for Best Performance by an Actress in a Leading Role. But really, like, that one wasn't as good a job at, like, really looking at mental illness. I thought the better movie around that same time was Woody Allen's Blue Jasmine, where Cate Blanchett did a great job looking at bipolar disorder, an excellent kind of an acting job in that case. Michael Keaton does a really good performance in this, but I think that overall, Alejandro González Iñárritu, the director of Birdman, kind of takes everything in a direction that is probably not actually helpful when it comes to dealing with mental illness.
What do you mean by that?
Well, this is a bit of a spoiler, so if you haven't seen it and you want to see it, maybe just come back later. You've been warned. Okay, so along the way throughout the movie, he starts to deal with suicide, so thoughts of suicide. You find out that in the past, he'd also tried to commit suicide at one point, the main actor. And it gets to this point where he starts to make suicide attempts, but what would actually in real life, if somebody did it, would result in their death, he escapes death. But he escapes death in a way that's completely unbelievable and not natural. So he's having these auditory and visual hallucinations, and he's standing on the top of a building, and he ends up jumping off. Well, that person would die. But in this movie, he flies like a bird because he's Birdman. That's not particularly helpful. And then it kind of happens a number of times through the movie. And then at the end, there is a... Now, this is a real big spoiler. At the end, this kind of thing happens again, and what you see is... you could chalk up all the rest of it to his hallucinations, you know, as part of his psychotic depression. But at the end, his daughter... you get the image of her looking up as though she sees him flying. And it's blurring the lines between fantasy and reality. And I think that if somebody has sensitivities towards suicide, if they have sensitivities towards mental illness, mental health issues, and they're watching this movie and they themselves deal with this stuff, or they are supporting somebody who's struggling with this, when you see it kind of happening like that, this is a problem. The other problem in the movie is that it kind of makes it so that his success eventually is linked to this. And for most people in their lives, success is not linked to this kind of mental illness. And that is also kind of a troubling part of it. I mean, this is one of these movies where you're watching it and it's kind of fascinating. It's crass, it's self-indulgent, kind of precious at points, but it's kind of fascinating to be watching it. When you take a step back and you think about what you're watching, at that point you start to think, you know, when you think back on the movie, you go, well, that doesn't really add up, and that isn't really working. For instance, if you were watching a Superman movie, you go into the movie theater, you sit down, you know you're going to watch Superman. Well, when he jumps into the phone booth and he changes into his outfit and he starts flying, that's not a problem because the whole entire film is about that. In this case, there's this real sense of hyper-realism because of the way the camera work's being done. And then the juxtaposition of this other element of it and the ambiguity that's left kind of at the end, it creates a dissonance that may not be particularly helpful. It is fascinating. It is dramatic. It's an interesting film, but I don't know how helpful it is in terms of a discussion about mental illness within society in general.
So it sounds like what you're saying, linking what we were talking about before with the its treatment of mental illness, this is a movie that is filmed in such a way to really break the third wall for the viewer. I mean, you feel like you're just kind of walking along with these people. You said God's eye view. It's hyper-realistic in the way that it is filmed. It's not cut like most films. I heard Ed Norton, who one of the actors in here, he said this is the opposite of the way you make movies. You know, you make movies 3 seconds at a time, not 10 minutes at a time. And the way life unfolds for us in a single unbroken kind of take throughout the day, that coupled with this blurring of reality, this man's psychotic delusions and hallucinations, is a dangerous thing, you say, in a mild way. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I would say it's there's a subversiveness to it. I mean, the movie really is dealing with ego, and it's kind of, you know, there's poetic irony, I guess, in the fact that it wins 4 Academy Awards plus Best Picture of the Year. You know, like, that's not the best way to deal with ego anyways, right? And the director himself, you know, when he was receiving the award, kind of, you know, commented about that. But, you know, like, because it's so much about ego and so much about you know, popularity and attention and criticism, it's just, you know, when you add in that mental illness angle to it, it's just a little, it's on the subversive end of things.
What would your pastoral impressions be? I mean, you've talked about here this as kind of movie critic, but sitting there as a Christian pastor watching Birdman, what thoughts did it engender in you?
The kind of glamorization of the mental illness. It's not that it's portrayed as fun and enticing or, you know, But it does. There's a kind of a layer of glamorization on it. Well, you know, and I know, like as Lutheran pastors, like when you deal with people that are struggling with mental illness, that kind of glamorous kind of end of it, that's not there. Like that's not real life. And I know people when they go to a movie, they're not really thinking real life, but you bring your confession of faith in with you into the movie theater, and you should be able to form an opinion about what you're watching. And if you don't have, you could either end up being a little offended by it, if you are somebody who deals with people with mental illness all the time, or if you don't deal with people with mental illness all the time, you could get the wrong impression about it. And I think that, you know, the time and care and hard work of taking care of somebody doesn't really completely shine through exactly super well in this movie as it would actually be in real life. I mean, he's certainly a challenge. This character has got complex relationships with people, and that's true to life. But there is just this glamorization part of it that I think is, as a Lutheran pastor looking at it, I don't see that. I don't run into that. And again, not every movie is intended to be a documentary either. But for whatever reason, that's something that gets under my skin. And it got under my skin with The Imitation Game and with Silver Linings Playbook. And yet, at the same time, when I saw that movie, Blue Jasmine, I appreciated the way that it was presented. So it's not as though I can't find a movie where they deal with mental illness in a way that I think would be appropriate. This is just one of those movies where, lost in the shuffle of all of the other things that are going on in this movie, you might miss this, but there is this glamorization of his mental illness going on, and that's maybe not the most helpful thing.
Returning to the Oscar for just a second in the few minutes that are left to us here, one of the little surprises that really shouldn't have been a surprise to many, given her what is really remarkable vocal talent, was the fact that Lady Gaga gave a very, very respectful, which is contrary to her entire career, a very respectful performance in order to honor Julie Andrews. Talk about that.
Yeah, that was, like, she sang music from The Sound of Music, and it was wonderful. It was really, really good. It was a surprise to me, and she was, like, just how good it was. She was, you know, fully dressed, you know, and you're right, it was respectful. And, you know, you see that and you think, could you do more of that? That would be wonderful. It was a real moment that I think was a surprise. And people were genuinely surprised when, like, Julie Andrews came out at the end of it and was there with her. And that was probably the best moment. I liked that moment better than most everything else. The rest of the Oscars were a little boring, and, you know, Neil Patrick Harris seemed to be struggling a little bit with nerves, I think, or maybe the material wasn't quite that funny and you can only work with what you got. But, I mean, he's done other things like the Tony Awards and Emmys and things like that, I think. So he's definitely the Tony Awards, and he's done well on those. This overall was kind of not a stellar year, but that Lady Gaga singing The Sound of Music was really kind of a nice moment. Maybe it's on YouTube somewhere, go find it. If you missed it, that would be worth taking a look at.
What does that tell you, with about a minute here, about Hollywood, that of all the things they can do, and they are always trying to poise themselves on the very cutting edge of everything, and Lady Gaga has been known for a career that is just all cutting edge. There's not, you know, again, very talented woman, but her presentation is always trying to push the edge of the envelope, that the most notable thing from the biggest night in Hollywood is just some old-fashioned music being sung by someone who is not trying to display anything except talent.
It kind of gets to the root of one of the aspects of the Oscars, and it's kind of an admiration thing, and that's what was coming out from Lady Gaga while she was singing, is admiration for that work from the past and what it meant to her and what it meant to everybody else gathered there. And there's a kind of a part of that that's part of the Oscars. Again, every year they have, like, in memoriam, like, all the people who, most of the people in Hollywood who have died in the last year, they have images of them that come up. There is a sort of sense of marking time and marking achievements collectively as a group of people. Like, this is part of it. And when it works well. And that was one of those moments that worked really, really well.
Pastor Ted Geese, he has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's associate pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He's taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. You can read his review of Birdman at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Ted, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller, our regular series, Responding to Evangelical Proof Text. We're going to take up a classic this time, Matthew 24, Jesus talking about two women grinding at a mill. One is taken, the other is left. Two men walking in a field. One is taken, one is left. Now, in evangelicalism, that's all the further you have to go to prove a secret rapture. We'll find out whether that's true right after this. How would you like to attend a conference and hear Paul Meyer, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, David Menton, Chris Roseborough, Jonathan Fiske, and Will Wheaton? You're invited to the 2015 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 19th and 20th in Collinsville, Illinois. Registration is $100 per person. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 19th and 20th in Collinsville, Illinois. issuesetc.org.
Those beautiful notes were just the beginning of We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God, Concordia Publishing House's debut CD collection from Pastor Stephen Starkey, one of the most significant Lutheran hymn writers of our time. For a limited time, save 10% when you use promotional code URA. Simply visit cph.org today. Lutheran thought, Lutheran substance, Lutheran music, brought to you by Concordia Publishing House.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
What if we made it clear to the Sunday morning visitor that Jesus is actually present, forgiving sins? I've written the second part of my essay, Lord's Day, Lord's House, Lord's Supper, and you can read it in the latest Issues Etc. journal. Just click the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. The Wittenberg Trail feature details Pastor Eric Rapp's journey from the New Age through Methodist Pietism to Confessional Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We have a special offer for Issues Etc. Reformation Club members. If you join or upgrade your membership in our monthly or annual giving program during January or February, we'll add the new Concordia Psalter to the list of current membership benefits. T-shirts, books, broadcast transcripts, and advertising for your confessional Lutheran congregation. You can find out the benefits of being an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron at issuesetc.org. Look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Or contact Craig, 618-223-8385. Or Craig at issuesetc.org. Join or upgrade your membership in the Issues Etc. Reformation Club in January or February, and we'll send you the new Concordia Psalter along with your other premiums. The Issues Etc. Reformation Club.